Okay.
And we're going
You want
live
me
on
to stop
Facebook.
Sharing?
No, you can put it up. You can put up the full screen if you like.
All right.
Okay. Thanks for being here today. My name is Kevin Conover. You're listening to Educate for Life Radio, and we're broadcasting down here in Southern California. If you're local, we're on FM 106.1 in North County and KPRZ 1210 AM. We're also, of course, all over the podcast scene and also on YouTube. You can check out all kinds of programs we've put up. We've interviewed all kinds of incredible experts on things like creation and evolution, as well as what's happening with in politics and government, all from a Christian perspective. The goal is to have a biblical worldview. I have a Christian apologetics class that I teach every year. I'm a 12th grade Bible teacher, apologetics teacher down here in Southern California at Christian High School and Shadow Mountain Community Church. And there's all kinds of resources on my website, educateforlife.org. You can check those out. Our guest today is the president and founder of the Quad City Creation Science Association, Mr. Helmut Welk. He's a retired engineering manager. He's worked in a variety of U.S. and international assignments with a Fortune 100 company. In 2006, he was elected to the board of trustees of an international society serving the industrial and systems engineering profession. He holds a U.S. patent, and he has a bachelor's and master's degree in industrial engineering from the University of Illinois at Urbana. In 2012, he was elected a fellow of the Institute of Industrial Engineers, and he's a member of the Creation Research Society and an ambassador for Logos Research Associates. And we're going to be talking today about specifically the claim that because there is a similarity between the chimp genome and the human genome, there's this claim that this means that we're related, that we have the same origins. And so we just are going to talk in detail about that. And Mr. Welk, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Hey, happy to be here, Kevin. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, you too. And this is great because you've got a slideshow for us. So that's really helps a lot. I know I'm a really visual person, right? They say a picture is worth 1,000 words. So talk to us about this. Help us understand, what is the claim from those who, you know, teach evolution and believe that evolution is reality? What's the claim in relation to human and chimp DNA?
Well, the belief has been for ever since Darwin, for well over 100 years, that we came from chimps because our basic anatomy is very similar. We eat the same food, we're made of the same proteins, that we evolved from apes since they kind of look like us. And they do have two eyes, a nose, a mouth, two legs, two arms, and so on. And so, you know, we can teach them to do tricks where, you know, there are various shows that I have seen people, just because they can do these tricks and then get a banana, they can act like humans. And so we must have evolved from them. Well, there's a lot of questions like that. Like, why aren't there any transitional forms even alive today? And we'll mention the fossils briefly, but mostly we're going to go into the claim that our DNA is 98.8% the same. And I think we've all heard that. I know I've heard it for well over 30 years.
Yeah, it seems like this is just assumed. And I've always wondered about that because, you know, the question I think comes immediately to mind is, you know, how are we similar? And are there other creatures that we're also similar to? So does this actually, you know, carry on into other relationships? If we were to say, for example, that lizards evolved into birds, is there similarities between lizard DNA and bird DNA? And, you know, how far do you carry that? Is that actual science or is this just a claim?
Well, I imagine there's some claims, but we got to remember, but most animals, we have not sequenced their DNA. We don't have it. The human genome has been sequenced. We have that pretty well in hand now. But that's because there's a lot of money paying scientists or funding their research to get into that, because it could help with human diseases, new drugs, and various things and helps with our diseases. So there's money there, so people are willing to fund it. There isn't nearly as much money funding mapping of the ape and chimpanzee genomes, let alone all the other animals. So there is some, and that actually plays into this whole story.
So the chimp genome has not been completely mapped like the human genome?
Not completely as of today even. Now, some people will say they have it, but let's get into this question, okay?
Sure.
I think we can do that. First, you know, I'd like to go back a little bit because the big claim was that we did come from apes who look similar and that they were finding all kinds of transitional forms, you know, different types of bones. And they said, well, this is a transitional form between ape and human. And, you know, this is a real old, this is in the middle, this is something else. So on this screen, and I have a whole talk that goes through all these bones, we've had claims, you know, Piltdown Man was a fraud, but it influenced scientists and the public for 50 years that this claim was true. And then in the 1950s, we found out it was complete fraud. And people today will admit it. And there's some other crazy things that went on in the first half of the 20th century that convinced generations of scientists, generations of people, yeah, we came from apes.
And then, how was Piltdown Man a fraud?
Piltdown Man was faked because there were some people who knew Darwin was looking for evidence that we came from apes. And in the early 1900s, somebody dug up a couple of fossils together, and one looked like the part of a bone from the skull that looked human. And then there was also a jaw that looked monkey-like. And they found it, put it together and said, hey, look, this is a transitional form. Well, then they found out later that the teeth had been filed by an iron file 50 years later. So did that mean Piltdown Man went to the Piltdown dentist to have some dental work done? I don't think so, but it was fraud. They took a known monkey fossil or jawbone, filed it down a little bit, put some acid on it, maybe who knows what else, to make it look old. And then they dug up a 600-year-old grave in England, took a piece of the human skull, took those two things, went and buried them. And then, I don't know the whole story, but somebody said, hey, go look over here. We might find some evidence for Darwin's story. And, oh yeah, here it is. 50 years, we thought it was proof. And some of these other things, everybody's heard of Neanderthals, for example, or Heidelberg man. Those have been shown to be fully human. And then we've got others, like Habilis, the Lucy fossil, spend a lot of time on that in this other talk, Sidiba, and then also Ardi and Ida. They're all been shown to be fully apes, nothing in between. There never were any ape men, especially about according to the bones. They were either fully human, and Neanderthals are fully human. They were a tribe of humans, lived during the Ice Age in caves, and they intermarried with other human tribes.
But the fossil Ida actually was very recently. Actually, I remember Google even posted it on their homepage.
It was big.
Yeah, it was huge. I had
Did you ever look at the actual fossil?
Yeah, and it doesn't look human in any sense.
It's a beautiful fossil, no doubt about it. You could see the fur on its outer skin. You could see hands and feet and the feet have thumbs on their feet. A long tail, and it's the same size and looks exactly like a lemur, or however you want to pronounce it, that you can find in zoos today.
Yeah,
it's just been squished down to the size of a thin, very thin fossil. So it never was. It's just a story that people have said. But so the point here is this whole evolutionary tree, at least from the bones, has been in shambles now for decades. I took this picture more than 10 years ago in the Chicago Museum of Natural History, their Evolving Planet exhibit, and it's untouched. They showed this picture with the red line through it, and it says, the hominid species did not evolve in a single direct progression from apes. That's an unedited photo from a major American museum.
Wow.
But the public doesn't always notice that.
No, yeah.
In fact, a professor from the Max Planck Institute in Germany, he said the once popular fresco showing a single file of marching hominids becoming ever more vertical, tall, and hairless now appears to be fiction.
Wow.
And that was in Nature magazine, a major scientific magazine. And then a Professor Wood said this: our progress from ape to human looks so smooth, so tidy. It's such a beguiling image that even the experts are loath to let it go. But it is an illusion. It's an illusion.
So if this is
never true.
So Hellman, if this is true, that they're saying this is all an illusion, what are they still holding on to from the fossil record that supports evolution? Because that's really from a fossil perspective, that really is the foundation of the claims of evolution.
And the reason I think this is an important topic is that one of the top reasons that young people give for leaving the church, because they think evolution is proven, especially that we came from apes. And if we came from apes, that must mean the Bible is not true. But it's an illusion that we came from apes. And in fact, by the year 2007, this was being recognized, but it wasn't really well known until they had something else. And in this article, you could see that they admit the fossils never resolved when a lineage is split, but DNA might. And then it says human DNA, chimp DNA differ by no more than 1.2%. And that's what they've been hanging on, at least the experts in the know, who know the bones don't do this.
Now
they've been hoping DNA will.
That's dated 2007. That's not that long ago. When did they first come up with the idea that human and chimp DNA were 98% the same? When did that first start coming out?
I think in the late 90s, but there was a study done that they were this close from, I didn't keep that slide. But I think in the early 2000s, they published the first try at a mapping of the chimp genome. And they did a little sample. They basically cherry picked portion of chimp DNA and a portion of human DNA that they already knew were similar, that coded for proteins that we both need because we eat the same types of foods. And then they said, voila, there's that number. Let me show you. There's such a big driver in the back of evolutionists' minds that they know we came from apes. Okay. We don't have the proof yet from the bones. In fact, it's been getting worse and worse, but the DNA, and that's where they hung on this number, and they need it to be small difference, because you even with mutations and natural selection, you're never going to be able to account for much more than 2% maximum over 6 million years or so to change our DNA and change it and get it established in the population. That's what you need. Not just a few mutations, but it's got to be established in the majority population. And that takes a lot of time.
So I just want to just reemphasize the point you just made. You're saying that you can't have too much differences between human and chimp DNA because the time required to make those changes is so great that if it were any more than 2%, you literally wouldn't have the time to be able to get it done. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and I'll show you a study that proves that. So here's what's my early point. They were starting, the human genome wasn't even mapped till 2001. It was in 2005 and the following years that they said they had the chimp genome mapped, but they really didn't. What they did is they went on the assumption, and as an engineer, you always look at somebody's assumptions when they're writing a report. And then you decide, okay, how good are these assumptions or not? Well, they began with the assumption that we do come from apes. Therefore, the human genome must be similar, and they used it as a scaffold to start mapping the chimp. And that's where you get into big trouble. Plus, the labs that they were doing the chimp sequencing, it's just hard to do this and not have human DNA contamination, because who's running the lab? Humans. Who's handling the samples? Humans. And the chimp DNA is still incomplete. We don't have all their chromosomes mapped. Some are further along than others. And those have are very different from the human.
Interesting. How much of the human, chimp DNA is mapped so far?
I don't have a number for you, but I would guess it's less than 50%. The rest of it, they just assume is the same as human and use that as a filler until they actually get some sequencing from the chimp.
Wow, that's so bad science.
A couple
science
chromosomes,
right there.
Including the male Y chromosome, have been mapped, and the differences are astoundingly great. So just to back this point up, the little known fact of this chimp DNA sequencing was accomplished by taking small snippets of DNA produced after sequencing, but then lining them up on the human genome. The human genome, because of the assumption, guided researchers throughout the chimp genome assembly process. And that contamination issue is still very big in most of the chromosomes.
So they're basically begging the question. It's circular reasoning. They're actually using the human genome to try to manufacture what they think the chimp genome is. And so, of course, it's going to end up looking similar if you're trying to base the chimp genome off of the human genome. Is exactly. that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, good point. So back in even 2006, you know, Time magazine had this on their cover, chimps and humans share almost 99%. And in 2012, there were still articles out there that said, ever since we sequenced the chimp genome in 2005, no, we really didn't. But then it says they have known humans share about 99% DNA with chimpanzees. Again, like you said, that was circular reasoning. We began with human DNA, started putting in some of the difference. And this is not easy. You know, just to be fair, it's not easy to sequence DNA. It's really based on a whole series of chemical tests and watching the reactions and seeing what happens that we can begin to do it basically, you know, small piece of a gene by gene and a little bit more. You never can get, it's not like sitting down and reading a computer program. It's totally multiple steps involved.
It's interesting.
So here's the other thing. When they published that number, they looked at only 97 genes. They cherry picked 97 genes from the chimp, 97 from the human, and then, you know, made some assumptions and then calculated a quick percent difference.
Out of how many genes?
Well, the current count is 20,000 genes that code for proteins. And at least that many of what we call non-coding genes, but play a very important role. They're controlling genes that control other genes. So that's very obviously going to be important. So it's a tiny sample. They basically ignored 96% of the genome when they came up with that 98.8 number.
Wow, that is so dishonest. That's unbelievable.
Well, what happens is, you know, the researchers, you know, they publish their findings as good as they can at that point in time. And in their findings, they may say things like 98.8% of the same was the same in this sample. The newspapers and the reporters, even science reporters, look at the headline and then just go with it. 98.8% the same. Even though they ignored 96% of the genome. Plus, it's very difficult to calculate a percent difference. There's something called insertions and deletions. In other words, a piece that's in one, but that's not in the other. One has a deleted, and then like you have a whole series of codes of these letters. And then suddenly there's a, in the human side, for example, there's a whole bunch of extra letters that aren't in the chimp side. So that's an insertion for the human or a deletion by the chimp. They ignore that. That's like having a long sentence. One sentence has the word not in it, N-O-T, and the other one is doesn't, but it's the very same. So do you think they might mean totally different things with just three
letters?
Yeah,
exactly.
Difference?
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
The next point is the structure of our chromosomes and chimp chromosomes is totally different. So it's very difficult. You cannot just calculate a percentage difference when the way things are put together and designed and written out in the genome. You cannot just calculate a percent difference because they don't line up nicely. And here's the big one. Chimps, apes, gorillas, all monkeys have 24 pairs of chromosomes. Humans have 23 pairs. Wow. So there's a big hint. The structure is different. So, and it's difficult to calculate a percent difference when the structure and the sequencing in most of the genome is very different. Here's what they ignored with a simple substitution like G substituted by A and the surrounding letters are the same, that, okay, you can calculate that. That was counted. But here you have a G between two T's, and here you have nothing. It's deleted here. That's called an indel, insertion deletion. They ignored it. And that makes a huge difference. There is a differences. That's what's not counted. And some of these insertions between chimp and human have up to 300 base pairs, 300 letters difference. That sounds like it could do totally different things, doesn't it?
Yeah. And so we have, according to my understanding, we have about 3 billion letters in our, in the human genome?
In our total genome.
Yeah. And what about, do chimps have the same, or is that a different number?
I think they actually have a little bit more, but the chromosomes are quite different. Primary chromosomes are aligned differently, and there's some that are similar, some that are different. So the point is the structure of the genome is different, especially with 24 pairs versus 23. Okay. So just to give you the recognition that this is beginning to see, in 2012, a leading primate evolutionist, Dr. Preuss, said, it is now clear that the genetic difference between humans and chimpanzees is far more extensive than previously thought. Their genomes are not 98 or 99% identical. So it's starting to get out there, but the general public hasn't heard this. So that's why I'm so excited to be on your show, Kevin.
Yeah. You know, it's so important that this information gets out there. I was talking to a student of mine that graduated a while back. She's at Baylor University. And in her science class, she told me they're still teaching that the Miller-Urey experiment actually generated, was giving evidence that life could come from non-life. And that's been debunked, ages ago. And yet that's still being taught in a university classroom by a science teacher at Baylor University. I was stunned by that. And yet, and this is the same situation. You have people continuing to teach these things that are deceiving people, and yet they're blatantly untrue.
For well over 100 years, the evolutionary theory has lived from deception, half-truths, and nice drawings that do not reflect reality.
Yeah, so a lot of what we're doing is just getting the information out there because, you know, there's not a lot of avenues to get it out there unless, you know, we're doing stuff like this and sharing that truth. So
yeah,
that's awesome.
And it is available, but you really got to dig for it. Here's another one, from England, professor at Oxford. He actually did a little study a little further and just recently in 2018. And he calculated the percentage of nucleotides in the human genome that had a one-to-one exact match in the chimpanzee genome was 84.4%. That is now a 15% difference. And that is big when you compare that to 3 billion base pairs.
Oh, that's huge. Well, now,
some others have calculated a little more, like closer to 90%. But you get away from 2% difference, and the evolutionary story is over.
Yes, and can you explain why that is? Because that's huge. I think a lot of people don't connect those dots, that it's not just about the fact, because somebody might say, oh, well, 84% is still good. I mean, I still feel good about that. It's still far beyond 50%. But why is it the evolutionary story over once you get away from that 2%?
Okay, let me, other than the quick 15% times 3 billion, that's a lot of letters that have to be changed and changed very precisely.
Yeah.
And I'll get into that just a little bit at the end here. But about the same time, Dr. Tompkins, who is a Christian, but he was head of the genome laboratories at Clemson University, where he got his PhD. And he did a separate study about the same size, and he came up with close to the same number, 84.4% identical. And that's where you can sequence it. And then I talked about the structure. He went on to say, the 84.4 nucleotide identity of the alignments is not an indicator of overall genome similarity because it does not include the regions of the contigs, which is continuous sections of genes, that are so different, they're not alignable. In other words, and you get so many differences with insertions and deletions, it's very difficult to come up with an arithmetic percent difference.
And that 84% is not saying that the entire chimp genome and the entire human genome are 84% similar. It's saying only these very small portions of the chimp genome that we've tried to make, you know, comparisons to the human DNA are 84% similar. Is that right?
Where we can calculate a difference, yes. He goes and says the same thing. A 15% DNA difference between humans and chimps is a discrepancy that can't be ignored when no more than about a 1% difference is required to make human evolution even plausible. And I'll get into that.
Yeah, that is a huge, that is a gigantic fact right there. I mean, that's, that is, like you said, it just shuts down even the possibility.
Yeah. So remember, the original number, 98.8%, those things were based on cherry-picked sections of DNA that were known to be similar. They came up with that number. The scientists documented where it came from, but the public was never told, and the reporters just went wild with the 98.8 number, and that's why it's in our lexicon. And of course, even the first chimp DNA models were biased based on shortcuts, believing that we are related. That's where the 98% number should come from. Nobody should use that number at all anymore. It's at least 10 to 15% plus the structural differences, okay?
Got it.
Mentioned the 24 sets of chromosomes, humans have 23. Here's what they, how they explain that, because they know that's a big problem that, you know, even the most average people can understand quickly. What do you mean 24 and 23? That's a big difference. So they came up with a story that the two of the chimp, in, which are in blue, chromosomes are relatively short. And they said, well, look, it matches, those two can match up to the human chromosome number 2 in the box. And somehow they merged in our evolutionary past. Now, why only humans have that, no other chimps, gorillas, or something in between? But even then, think about, if you know anything about reproduction and the requirements to have our chromosomes line up at reproduction, if you suddenly have a couple of them fusing, that is nuts when it, trying to think of hereditary and getting, not getting birth defects like crazy instead of a higher, more complex human type. But they say two chimp chromosomes must have fused together into one human chromosome at some point in our history. And there they are, the longer human chromosome 2, chimp chromosomes 2A and 2B, as they've been conveniently named. This is the story. The first two blue lines are chromosomes 2A, 2B. Somehow there has to be a fusion point where the ends of these two chromosomes come together. But then there's something else, what's called a centromere. There should have been two of them if there were two chromosomes before. Where is the other one in human chromosome 2? A valid question. So yeah, at the end of every chromosome, there's something called telomeres. Those are the ends. They're kind of like a repeating signal that goes on by the thousands to saying, here's the end coming up to the end. You know, it's like the end of an escalator at the big airports. Moving walkway is coming to an end. Okay, chromosome is coming to an end. You know, just to give a crude example. Sure. But they say that somehow these telomeres at the end of chromosomes, they can get tangled very rarely, but somehow chimp 2A and 2B tangled and became one chromosome, which is a big trick. But then you got to account for the centromeres. When the mama and papa halves of every 23 chromosomes come together, they know how to line up based on what's called the centromere. It's this kind of a thin point in every chromosome, and each chromosome is a little different. So they, you know, the right ones find the right ones and then they match up. Well, we should have what's now called two centromeres from these monkey chromosomes. And then there's one that stays dominant in human chromosome 2, but somehow there should be a sign that we have a cryptic or unused centromere on human chromosome 2. Get the idea?
Yeah.
Well, that's the unused centromere. Well, the fusion site's been studied. They actually have a proposal because they think there's some telomere-like letters in this chromosome 2, but it's been looked at. And the first big point is that is in the middle of an expressed gene. In other words, it's in the middle of a gene that's being used. That gene had to be there from the beginning. It couldn't be the result of fusion. At best, it would be two genes, and then should have this big telomere in the middle. But the telomeres, sections, small sections of what looks like a telomere, show up throughout our chromosomes. And if it's really telomeres from the end of chromosomes, it should be huge, 10 to 20,000 letters long, because that's how long telomeres can be. So this thing is expressed. In other words, it's necessary for you to become you.
Mm. Yeah, so it's not like it's, quote, vestigial or leftover junk DNA or something like that, right?
Exactly. It's necessary. It can't be just a fusion site with all these telomeres that really don't do anything. It is necessary. And second, there's no sign of long telomeres in the fusion site. And also, there's 24 million base pairs missing. If you put chimp DNA 2A and 2B, which are so totally chromosomes, and then, yes, a little shorter than most, but if they fuse together through the ends at telomeres, well, then human chromosome 2 is 24 million base pairs too short. So
the question would be, where did they go if during the evolutionary process?
Missing that much, this is important stuff in heredity and in your development. We know that all the genes are being used. There's no such thing as junk DNA.
You'd kill your organism. If you all of a sudden lost 24 million base pairs, the organism would die. These kinds of changes are exactly not feasible.
And then the fourth point is there's no unused second centromere site in human chromosome 2. So this whole story was a fictionalized story to try to explain the difference between humans, which all have 23 pairs normally, and then all apes and chimps and gorillas have 24 pairs. No fusion site. It's not scientifically possible. Humans could only have 23 pairs. All apes and chimps still have 24 pairs, okay? So if anybody tells you, oh, that's the reason they're different, there's a fusion site, it's been looked at and debunked.
What I think a lot of people just don't realize is they just don't realize how much of these claims are not based on actual observable, repeatable, measurable science, but they're just, like you said, somebody telling a story to try to make sense of something. And so a lot of people just go along with it and go, oh, okay, that must be the case. They don't realize these are just assumptions and assertions and speculation. It's not actually real.
And that's what it takes. It doesn't require a lot. You just start digging a little and you start asking, okay, what are the assumptions here? Maybe they're good assumptions, but we should be told what the assumptions are because we don't have, like you said, repeatable experimental proof. They're just kind of helping the idea along. And if they would tell us that, that would be so much helpful and more scientific. Mm. And quickly, the third problem is kind of alluded to this earlier, and that's what's called the wait time. In other words, you need to have at least 75 million letters to switched, and that's based on a 5% difference between ape and human genomes. How long would evolution take to do this if it was totally based on random mutations and natural selection picks the good ones? So nowadays, we can actually calculate this. And this was done based on, only a 2.5% difference gives you the 75 million letters. But they started small. Now remember, what's key is that it's not just a single mutation happening and then say, oh yeah, that's a good one, let's pick it. It's got to become established in the population. So evolutionists have this story that there was once a population of 10,000 chimp-like creatures that were becoming human, and that we all evolved from them. And so you have to have this change, all of these changes to become a modern human in a large population. Otherwise, if it did happen, it could die out very quickly. And that's probably what did happen if this story was true. It would die out, come back, die out. Oh, then suddenly two people have it. Oh, finally, a male has it and a female has it. And they match. And they find each other. Say, hey, you there, I like your genes.
So just for our people who don't know a lot about genetics, just correct me if I'm wrong here, but basically within that approximately 3 billion letters in your genome, that's in every cell of the body, there would have to be 75 million letters that were changed from that 10,000 ape-like population.
Within that population, yep.
Within a certain time frame, just to get to a normal human that we have today, you'd have to have 75 million.
Well, that was based on a 2.5% difference, and now we know it should be been high. But they had to start small, and so they looked at it and finally said, okay, we're gonna look at what does it take to do 2-letter changes that becomes established in the population, and then 5-letter changes, okay, not millions. And the time is rigged to establish a string of 20 nucleotides that are right, the right ones, not just random, and established in the population took an average of 84 million years. To get 5 in a row, remember, they got to be in the right sequence, in the right place, and established, that took 2 billion years simulation time.
Oh my goodness.
And they have guessed that we, Lucy type to human took three to three and a half million years ago. That's why it's called the wait time problem.
Second. Wait, this is crazy. I just want to make sure I'm understanding you correctly. So we just established that if there was a 2.5% difference between the chimp-like ancestor and a human, that would be 75 million nucleotide changes, letter changes in the genome. And they came up that to establish just a change of 5, it would take 2 billion years.
Yep. And the program, it's a very complicated simulation program. That code was given to secular believers that we came from apes and let them examine it. And they questioned this and they questioned that. And then they finally had no more questions. They just don't answer because they don't like the answer.
Wow.
The most generable, and they use very feasible but generous parameter settings. And the wait time was consistently prohibitive. To do this really in a real, to go from really from some chimp-like to become human-like would take billions. It'd be old, take longer than the universe is supposed to be old.
Way more longer. That's 5 to 2 billion years. The universe is supposedly 14 billion years, or what is it? Yeah, 14 or so billion years old. So you'd get to what, 35 nucleotide changes in the time the universe has existed. Yeah, so there's just no way. Yeah, you can't do it. Wow, that's really amazing.
And you can Google it. This is known in scientific circles of the geneticists of all kinds that do look at this. It's just simply called the wait time problem. Wait being W-A-I-T or waiting.
Yeah, yeah. You just can't get evolution to happen quick enough in order for it to be justified, along with so many other problems as well, right?
Right. Too many changes, not enough time. Wow. Not even close.
That's amazing. Well, for those of you who have maybe just tuned in or recently tuned in, my guest today is Helmut Welk. And he has taken a tremendous amount of time to study these issues regarding the similarities, the claims of evolutionary similarity between human and chimp DNA, and whether that's a justification for believing that we originated from some chimp-like ancestor, and it falls completely flat. Mr. Welk, if somebody wants to check out more about this information, where can they go to get more information from this kind of stuff that you've been presenting?
Well, if you want to find out more about it from me, but I would ask you first this question. If you start to learn a little about this, what are you going to trust? God's word or man's word, which is continually changing? Mm. And I do have this thumb drive. I mentioned it early. You know, just contact me at that website, info, or that email, info@QCCSA.org. info@QCCSA.org. QCCSA.org is our website. And we've got a few things on there. We're a local creation group, but I'm the founder and president, and I've been doing a lot of speaking in the last 15 years on this. So you can contact me for that thumb drive. I can send you a credit card invoice by email and then send you the thumb drive. And you'll get 7 topics, including this one, a long version of the chimp DNA talk, but more about apemen and the bones, dinosaurs, genetics, origin of life, and carbon 14. So
that's fantastic.
There we go.
Something else, you know, that's interesting that I was, I just read this in an article published by Creation Ministries. And it says here that the evolutionary biologists, Dr. John Alquist, the scientist who first proposed that our DNA is 98% similar in the 1980s, retreated from this idea and even became a creationist, which I thought was pretty interesting. Maybe he was so on the cutting edge that he was one of the first to conclude that, no, this isn't going to work, and ultimately became a creationist.
Yeah, so, in the 1980s, he probably thought he was onto something evolutionary-wise, but fortunately, and he kept with it. He kept up with the science because, you know, 1980s, it was still very early in genetic research. And now we know so much more, and it's just become much more impossible.
Mr. Welk, thank you so much for being on the program today. And I think I love what you're doing and really appreciate it. And we just have to get more people to hear this, because when the bottom line is there is just no way evolution could work. It's just not going to happen.
Evolution has been debunked, and yet science students are being taught, oh, it's proven. And they may get a little snippet here and there, or something that what we call microevolution or natural selection, which could be real. There is variation built into the genome, and it does express itself over time, but all you get is species and subspecies. The created kinds is probably at the family level of biological classifications. And that explains why dogs, foxes, wolves are all related, but they never turn into eagles.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, thanks again for being on the program today. And Helmut Welk, you guys, if you want to check out his resources, you can visit Quad City Creation Science Association. That's QCCSA is the website. And .org, and get the resources there. So please check that out and spread the word, because it's really important. Next week, I'm going to be having on Dr. Gary Bates. We're going to be talking about this whole alien phenomenon, that they're actually having these sessions in Congress discussing the evidence. And we're hearing from all these experts who are saying, yes, you know, we actually have seen them. We've dialogued with aliens. We have, you know, all this stuff. So it's pretty wild. And he's actually written a book called Alien Intrusion, which discusses this phenomenon in great detail. And there's been a ton of research that's been done on it. I think you'll really enjoy it. So hopefully you can join us next week. And thanks for being here. We will see you next time. God bless you. Have a great week.
God bless you. And thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Helmut.
Bye-bye.